Does picking an outfit have you running a little too fashionably late? We get it. Great taste takes time. That's why Drizly, the number one app for alcohol delivery, has your back with the largest selection of beer, wine, and spirits delivered in under 60 minutes. Convenience never goes out of style. So if you need to spend some extra time in the mirror instead of at the store, download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's drizly.com today.
This is Jake Brennan from Disgraceland, and you're listening to Pantheon Podcasts, Rock a Roll.
Pantheon Podcasts presents Deeper Digs with host and rock and roll archaeologist Christian Swain. Music, culture, technology, and rock and roll. Now, on with the show.
Hey now, you know you never listen, Sunshine. You know you're always missing out. You're so proud, diggers. Hey, that's a lyric from the song Sunshine, written by our guest today, Josh Kennedy of the Black Moods. We will get to all of that in just a little bit, okay? So, with episode 19 of Rock and Roll Archaeology out, we're going to try and do two things at once. Well, one of them is more like kill two birds with one stone sort of thing. Yes, we are already working on episode 20 and even had our first production meeting on it. I think we are settling in on the major topics. And so that's a huge sign for us to get this done and out quicker. Cross your fingers, because even though I say that we will, we'll just have to see how it goes. We will not release a wine before it's time and all of that. Same with our episodes. But since this will be closing out the first half of the series, and we always knew this was how we would end Volume 1, theoretically, it should move along much quicker and not take 8 months like it did between Episode 18 and 19 did. And yes, this will be the last chapter in what we are calling Volume 1, which took us from before the rock and roll era to 1970-ish. We're closing out the 60s. We're opening up the 70s here. We strongly feel the story changes drastically with the new decade. And therefore, you know, we feel we need to change our telling a little. When we began, it was easy to tell the story through individuals, and we did that. We focused on the pioneers and were able to do so because it was really such a small club. Once we got to the Beatles, we realized the number of players was impossible to tell each individual story. So we picked our targets, and the best way for us to do that was actually by geography. If you remember, we did an episode on the Los Angeles scene, Southern California scene, San Francisco, New York, a little bit of Detroit, you know, London, obviously. And then that even becomes kind of difficult. In 1969, part one and two, we had to just focus on a single year. Certainly the end of the 60s was worthy of a two-part sprawling epic. There's no doubt about that. You know, almost 4 hours of podcasting material between those two episodes. But now we're going to have to adjust again. First, because the story is less geographic. As we said in the last episode, rock and roll has literally gone global. And second, because the players have gotten massive. There's just too many of them. You know, unlike the pioneers of the early days, the space just gets more crowded. And while we're still figuring it out, it is probably best we pick genres through the 70s as buckets to tell the stories, kind of like we did with geographies, where we feel that the most important of our mission, music, culture, and technology, coming together in this moment of music history. That's the primary goal. So as long as it's about those three things and how those things wove together to create the feedback loop, I think we're still pretty much telling the story. Though we are going to, I know we're going to hear from you going, what about this guy? Or what about this band or this woman. We're going to do the best we can. But it does. It gets to be such a massive story in a great way. And we will hit on as many as we can. All right. So now to hold you over for us to kill the second bird. we're going to reproduce episode one for all of you. Why, you may ask? Well, first, we've just gotten so much better at producing the podcast, and episode one sounds so antiquated and ancient to our ears. The numbers tell us that, not surprisingly, it is the top episode, so we know it's the entry for most people. Second, we need to put this in shape as a script because it is going to be the pilot to our hoped-for documentary series. So there you go, two birds, one stone. We're almost finished with the script of episode one, the rewrite, and so it will be heading into production next week, which means maybe we're a month away. But again, since this seems more than done, and obviously was done once before, we should be quicker than, you know, a whole new episode like episode 20 will inevitably take, because we're not having to create this from scratch. All right, so keep listening to the space. I'll keep up the news. I'll keep you guys informed on where we're at, what's going on with that. We get a lot of email on Rock and Roll Archaeology. Really appreciate it. Okay, just want to mention patreon.com Rock and Roll Podcast. If you'd like to support all we do around here, we would greatly appreciate it. Let me give just a shout out to some of our Patreon members. Lisa, Kenny, Malcolm, Mike, Amy, Francois, Jimmy, Wendy, Anthony, Sarah, Suzette, and Devorin. Thank you guys so much for continuing with us. You guys, most of you have been around for a while. We greatly appreciate it. Just want to give a quick shout out to all of you. You know who you are. Some of you I talked to in messaging, and I do really enjoy that. All right. For all of our shows and any other info, you know, go to the network, pantheonpodcast.com. Okay, that's it. That's the news. Let's get to it. This week, we have a new discovery for everyone. Josh Kennedy is the lead guitarist and chief songwriter of the band The Black Moods out of Tempe, Arizona. If you like some of the new rock and roll that's been rising up over the last few years, and I mean bands like Greta Van Fleet, The Struts, or Bones UK, you will probably love these guys. Now, people compare Greta to Zapp and The Struts to Queen. Well, in a weird way, this power trio reminds me of Stillwater. You know, the fictional band from Cameron Crowe's Almost Famous. Maybe it's because I just rewatched the film a few weeks ago for the 20th anniversary. But still, the Almost Famous Stillwater guys, you know, they kind of fit in an amalgamation of Zeppelin, Allman Brothers, Skinner. I'm sure you would gather this if you were paying attention, you know, a little bit about Cameron Crowe's backstory. My point being, the Black Moods are not trying to invent something new. as to more take the reins from the classic sound and make it pertinent to the 21st century. The Black Moods are made up of Josh and his bandmates, Chico Diaz on drums and bassist Jordan Hoffman. You'll hear they just recently went from Tempe, Arizona to the Ozark for the shutdown by COVID. They just released a new album called Sunshine, 10 songs of straight ahead rock and roll that will get your motor running. This is their third outing on record, and the maturity shows. Okay, so let's get into it. Let's get to me, Josh Kennedy of the Black Moods.
I've been watching you and everything you do, how you impress your friends. I should be one of them. Oh, I should be your friend. I see you checking in, so I'll be stepping out. I wanna see your face. I hope it's not too late.
Welcome to Deeper Digs, Josh. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, man.
Oh, hey, it's our pleasure. And, you know, it's not often that we get a chance to talk to some newer bands. You know, you definitely fit into what we're all about here on Deeper Digs and Rock with, you know, kind of a classic rock feel with what you guys are going for. But, you know, I talked to a lot of legends with decades of recording and touring experience to get their thoughts on, you know, this unprecedented situation where we all find ourselves in. But what, you know, what is a band that's still trying to grow into a major act? You know, think about where the music industry is with this pandemic and what you think is on the other side of it.
Well, I don't know. We just always kept our nose down, you know, we kept our heads down and just always pushed ahead no matter what. That's, we've been, you know, doing it for so long. We kind of forget that there's anything else going on but us. Sometimes we get so engulfed in what we're doing, but with the way, we're just trying to get through and adjust accordingly because everything's different now, you know, and it's going to be different after all this. It's shifting in a way that, you know, it's unprecedented really for the business.
Yeah.
So, we just kind of buckled down and started working on a new record because we can't tour. We made our last record. It took like about 2 year span to get the thing done because we were touring so much. We would, when we had a week or two off in between legs of the tour, we would stop and we would go into the studio instead of taking a week off, and we would just go and record and then get three songs in or four songs and back on the road. And we got another break, another 2 months, we'd do the same thing. So it took us long to get this. So since touring's down, we figured we might make a record now. And then when we're touring, when we actually have a week off in between legs of the tour, when it comes back around, we can sleep or do something that normal people do.
You know? No, that's not going to happen. you know, until, you know, you have so many platinum records you know, world record breaking tours, all that, you know, then finally one of you will say, okay, fuck it. I've had enough. I need a break. until then, you're doing what the old school guys did, man. It was, you know, tour in the studio in that break, whenever that might be, tour in the studio.
Absolutely right, man.
And so it is kind of cool that, you know, as you said, you just came out with a new album, Sunshine, here about 6 weeks ago, it dropped. And you're able to actually go right back into the studio and build upon it. And, you know, hopefully when we do get to the other side of this, you're going to have two records that you're going to be able to promote, a lot more material to show off. And isn't that the whole point of this, you know, this rock and roll thing, is to have new material, good new material that you can get a rise out of the audience, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're really lucky too, because I was telling you that we moved our entire studio. We packed it up in the bus and from Tempe, Arizona, because normally we're on the road during the summertime, so we don't usually have to put up with the Arizona heat. So much. And this time with no touring, we're like, we're going to sit here and just bake, you know, and can't go outside at all. And so we just packed our studio up, brought it to the Ozarks. Our label head, he has a beautiful house here. So we set it up, and oddly enough, you know, Eddie Kramer, right? Is just the god of gods, right? And I'd met him years ago through Gene Simmons, actually. He introduced me to him, and we just kind of kept in touch. And with all this going on, he said, let's do a song track together. I've worked with him on outside projects, but never with the Black Nudes. And so he produced the track for us from his studio in Toronto. And so our whole studio is set up by Eddie Kramer, which is great. So we're having the best tones, the best everything right now. It's amazing.
Yeah. So that is an advantage of being off the road and you guys, you know, quarantining together, moving from Tempe out to the Ozarks and able to really dial in, you know, the studio, along with, you know, a legend.
Yeah. Cause normally if any other time I've worked with Eddie, it's been in East West or Ocean Way or, you know, a big studio.
The big studios. Yeah.
You get a couple of days in, and then when you're done, they break everything down and you're off, and that's all the time you get. Well, he set everything up to Zeppelin specs, and he did it in Toronto, and he took over he had control of our rig, you know, from Toronto through some software called Audio Movers. So he was controlling everything, and we worked on that
track. So you could see the dials move as he was controlling it in Toronto.
Yeah. And it was just, it's kind of revolutionary. He's never done it before. And so we documented the whole thing, which is really cool. And then, but when we were done, we didn't have to break everything down. So we're using all his tones, all his tricks and methods and everything we got to keep. So we're recording for the next 2 months, you know, as long as this shit's lasting, we're going to be doing this, you know?
Yeah, I'm afraid it's going to be more than 2 months. I know everything that I see.
A while.
Yeah, it's this year's pretty much toast. Yeah. You know, so everybody that I talk to has been, don't even think until probably spring of 2021 and maybe even summer. And to be honest with you, there's a lot of people that feel that it just is not viable until a vaccine is developed people, the audience themselves can feel safe. I mean, if you think about trying to get back into a theater, you know, that normally holds 5,000 and their social distancing requirements with 50%, that's 2,500 people. And but does that economically work for the venue, for the cost of tour, all the support people and things like that? I it's just so hard to kind of
bad sci-fi move is what it is.
Yeah, it is a bad sci-fi. Yeah, well, I think it was just a question of when this sci-fi movie was going to show up.
Yeah.
Given you know, the planetary issues and the fact that you know, Mother Nature was going to slap us back one way or another, and you know. Yeah. So, but at least you're finding something good about it. And that is continuing to record. You have more time, probably more focus by not having to do it in between, you know, tour legs. So you're not tired.
Yeah. Everything's closed too. So there's no like distractions. We're not getting phone calls. Be like, hey, come out to the club, have a beer, hang out.
Oh yeah. There's all that too. Yeah.
And we're always like, oh, okay, well maybe we have a beer, you know, next thing you know, you're not getting anything done. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So quarantine is working out for the Black Moods. We may get a second record out of it fairly quickly.
It'll be ready to go. That's for sure.
Yeah. So coming out over the last decade, you know, what have you kind of seen in the music business that maybe others should emulate if they're just starting out?
You know, with the social medias and all that stuff, because that's an art form in itself, being able to function and all that, because I'm very not good at that stuff, you know. Uh-huh. I can sit down and write songs and play guitar and do that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think
now we're all born with certain gifts and therefore have to give up other gifts.
Yeah, it isn't my bag, but that's what I've seen the most over the past 10 years to need to be a focus and be good at is as a band, because you can be successful just through your social medias, your platforms, you know, and not ever play a show. Some of these, we've being out on tour with some of these guys, they have huge social media numbers and they suck live that we've seen. And it's like, it's backwards. So where we come from is like, I sat in my room my whole entire youth as a kid playing guitar to Clapton songs and Creedence Clearwater songs. And there was no YouTubing to figure out how to play it. You listen to the radio and that's how you learn it. And you stop the cassette or the CD and you rewound it until you got the part down. To where kids nowadays, you know, they can.
You can loop one piece.
Oh yeah.
Over and over again, and just sit there until you're emulating it exactly.
It's insane. I mean, I'm jealous. but as far as all that goes, I think that's what I've noticed the most is being social media savvy is a new art form that I think is that young bands should be good at. Because
well, let me ask you this: is it replacing radio as kind of like the initial point of entry for a new band?
In some aspects, I think so. Because if you have, because radio does that too. You know, that's where we're at right now. We're going to radio. Where our single is being pushed right now, and you're up against bands that. Where radio people look at your socials too, numbers.
Yeah.
So it's all incestuous in that manner, you know.
So if your social media numbers aren't significant, then that, you know, that or your social media numbers equal the number of spins you get in a 24-hour cycle.
It's like that, you know. It's strange, but and I'm just barely, you know, learning it. Mm-hmm. I'm just now kind of, like I said, I'm not a good book learning guy. If it's got strings, I can handle it.
right. Well, like I said, you know, I mean, we're all born with certain skill sets, and you know, and then there's the amount of time and interest that it requires to become an expert at something. And you know, hey, you know, kudos to you. Unlike a lot of younger players, you know, it's not necessarily about, you know, doing the homework and the woodshedding and the intense practicing that needs to occur, and then the rehearsal with a live act, when you know you can get on a computer and make that damn thing do it all for you.
Right. It's and that's another thing is you can do it all you want in Fox, the computer and all that stuff, but inevitably
watch what you're doing with your right hand there. You're hitting like the microphone.
Oh, sorry. There was something. Yeah. I was trying to come off there instead of screwing up. Sorry. But that's the thing. You gotta be able to play it live. You gotta sound good, and there's gotta be chemistry there. Cause I've seen a lot of bands, they sit in there and they record the song, they don't get out of their bedroom, they make it all themselves, and then it's like, oh, now I gotta go put a band together. And then you gotta find a guy, I need you to play drums and play this part, and it's just stale. And it's frustrating to see bands like that I like, that I'm a fan of, and then to see them live and to realize that it's just like one guy that made everything and now he's putting it together. And so there's no chemistry in the band. Everybody's just like, okay, I'm getting my paycheck, you know, might as well punch in a time clock and work in a Walmart or wherever the hell it is.
Yeah, that might work with, you know, with pop princesses and, you know, a plethora of dancers distracting the audience,
right.
A band for hire.
You know, that will play into tracks. Like,
yeah,
you could every musician could easily just stop playing and the song would keep going.
Yeah. That's it's entertainment, but is it rock and roll? Definitely not rock and roll. That begs the question, not only are we living through a pandemic, but you know, we're living through a lot of cultural changes. that I think are going to take root and be around for a while. I don't think these are temporary issues. You know, we've had some systemic issues in this country for a long time that has been left from being addressed. And it now looks like, you know, people are beginning to pay attention to that. And what that means to me is that, you know, usually times like that want more authenticity, want music that is perhaps a little more powerful, maybe fits the message of the street a little bit more. And, you know, we've gone through this, you know, 15, 20 year, maybe not long after, after 9/11, where, you know, things were anesthetized. It was, music was kind of, not challenging. And in fact, it had been corporatized far too much. And, you know, when I got a chance to listen to you guys, I didn't hear that. I heard some, you know, old school classic rock and roll. You know, do you think the world is looking for something, what you guys have to offer?
Yeah, I hope so, you know.
Well, of course you hope so.
I hope so, but I think so. I think what we're doing, and we haven't changed what we've done. We've always been three guys that's played rock songs.
Yeah, power trio. Yeah.
It's just been that way, and I feel like, you know, people are starting to catch on a little bit and know that we're sincere in what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's, you know, there's been enough of the Biebers or whatever, you know, the boy band stuff, or yeah, what we were kind of talking about, the overproduced, oversaturated, just.
Yeah, computer generated, yeah. 20 producers, 15 writers.
I think it always fills up to where it finally had just kind of, when Nirvana came in and the hair bands were huge and it just got so saturated with just hairspray and you know, makeup and all this stuff. And it kind of knocked it all off the table. I think that's where it's going to get again, where people have had enough of this thin sounding, overproduced, you know, garbage, and it leaves room for the actual organic people, you know, that play music together and then have that, you know, rock sensibility where it's just kind of organic and from the earth type of fucking thing.
Yeah, that's a great analogy, going from the hair metal bands of the late 80s into Nirvana. Yeah, maybe a Guns N' Roses and Metallica step in between. But yeah. Certainly, you know, I remember, you know, I was on the Strip playing at that time. And I can tell you, the scene literally changes within 6 months from one to another. It, you know, you could literally see it happening on a day-to-day basis when those guys came out. And yeah, it would be nice to see that again. I think, and a lot of people I talk to, you know, get, you know, this, say the same thing that you've said, that, you know, we've taken this chemistry type of concept of music, which is, you know, all put into a package. Everything is done through analytics. You know, the producers are flying in their hooks right at the exact moment that the computer algorithm says it needs to be, which will get the right serotonin to jump off, you know, the whole drop it and, you know, everything. And to, but it takes so much of the human element out of it. And isn't that the point of art, is to make this emotional connection?
That's the good stuff, man. The little nuances and little mistakes and, you know, the stuff that should stay in there that makes it human is what I love about it the most.
Yeah, including the mistakes.
Yeah, and that's what Eddie was saying too. He's like, leave that in there. You know, he's tracking Zeppelin and this kind of stuff and the stuff that they'd leave in there and like how a whole lot of love when they were mixing it. The verb that happens in the breakdown was accidental, and him and Paige were kind of looking at each other like, holy shit, this is awesome. You know, what a great mistake type of thing. And they keep that stuff in there. That's what I love about music. You know?
Yeah. A lot of people don't know, like, you know, I take LA Woman as an example, that, you know, it's a song that starts up at about 120 beats per minute, drops down to about 80 beats per minute, and then goes to about 160 beats per minute by the time it ends, you know? And you're like, it has this this inherent energy to it that's not calculated. It just, it's between the guys that are playing.
Yeah, it sounds like guys drinking beers, having a good time. You know, like it should. That's what got me into it in the first place.
Here's a quick word from our sponsors. We'll be back in a bit. And now back to the program.
Yeah. So, you know, I understand you guys have been doing a little bit of the live streaming thing that a lot of people have been taking on as, an ability to still, attract an audience, keep your name out there, and even, you know, emulate a live type of event, but without an audience. How do you like that, and how do you think that's working, and how do you think it might improve?
Well, it's very awkward, to say the least. We've done like four of them, I think, and yeah, it takes a week of rehearsals to do the one show, because now you got videographers come in, you got to mark where you're at and where they're going to shoot you, and then you got to make sure the sound syncs with the video. You know, this stuff's for Saturday Night Live and stuff like that. We're not supposed to be doing this kind of thing. But, you know, the weirdest part is that crowd interaction that you're missing, because after a song gets done, you're just kind of looking at each other because, you know, it's funny. Our sound engineer, Al, we did one, and he put in, after one of the songs got done, he put a cricket noise in our head.
Oh, that sucks. That's mean.
But that's what it's like, you know? So I miss that. And is that exchange between the audience and the band. That's what it's.
Oh, like. No, the feedback loop is, you know, that's especially for rock and roll, you know, without it, it's really missing something. That, you know, I've always said that rock and roll just never translates very well to the 2D screen. I don't care how big or great the band is, it's not the same as being in the room.
Right.
And you can't replicate that. I know many have tried over the decades, and you know, we've gotten some good stuff. I mean, you know, I don't mind, you know, listening to, the Dead, in their live, streaming, you know, with an audience, and, you know, back when they could do this, you know, and just playing it in the background. You know, I've seen the Dead a million times, so I can imagine it all in my head. But again, it's still not quite the same as, you know, having your comrades around you, your brothers in arms, that are literally enjoying it all at the same time you are. You know, I thought maybe an improvement for this live stream is to, you know, sit up in the audience a bunch of computer screens that are facing the band,
right,
and then have the faces of the people there, you know, with their little lighters.
I would take it.
Yeah. And if your sound guy wanted to be, you know, provide a positive reinforcement for the band, he might fly in, you know, huge crowd noise from Wembley Stadium or something like that, which will make you guys, oh, this is awesome. Okay, I feel good.
That or the laugh track from Friends episode. It's interesting to do. Another thing about the live streams, they're nerve-wracking for me because now it's online and it lives forever. The thing about a show is it's different. You know, something goes wrong, it's like you work your way through it and everything. On a live stream, something goes wrong, people are just sitting there watching it.
They go, oh, that was a bad one.
No redoing this, you know.
Yeah. It takes away the mandala type of painting that get with the live show. It's a one and done and moving on. So, all right. So let's get you back to Wheaton, Missouri. What was it like growing up there in the Ozarks? I guess that's not really the Ozarks. Missouri.
We're south. The Ozarks is the whole, it's kind of like, I always wondered about New England. It's kind of that kind of thing. The Ozarks encompass this whole kind of area that we're in.
Yeah.
But it was great. It's a town of 600 people.
That's pretty small.
Yeah, there was, and I grew up.
So you rode a horse to school.
It wasn't far enough away to get on the horse and get. I could just walk across the street. No. But seriously, it was like that, and there's just. it was great to be in the, have the country and the freedom, that, that kind of thing. And, but I just, my dad was in a band, so I grew up.
Yeah, that's what I read. Original band, cover bands, or just any band?
Yeah, they made a record. More of like Alabama-esque, like those kind of groups, like the country. They did
lots of harmonies, five guys singing at the same time, that sort of thing.
I grew up around, you know, my mom's water broke at one of his gigs with me, so that's how.
Wow, that's very rock and roll, man. Born at a show.
Yeah, pretty much, man. And but just growing up there, there wasn't a budding rock scene, as you can imagine.
A little more country type of part of the country, especially back then. The
music business wasn't booming. And, you know, I was 28 in my graduating class. So I was 8 in the neighboring school's graduating class that same year. So it's like Little House on the Prairie style stuff. But it fed me to, you know, to look for something and to get out. And playing guitar was my escape. That's all I did. I just sat in my room and played guitar. I would go to my dad's gig and roadie. Mm-hmm. Eventually I got to start jamming with them, you know, when I was like 12 and 13. And then I kind of put my own band together and we played around as much as we could. And then you hit a wall and you're like, you know, I don't want to be a weekend warrior anymore. I want to do this full time. And so I had to get out. And that's what led me to Phoenix, Arizona, you know, for school.
So as you're growing up, obviously music's a part of the family lifestyle with your dad playing before. I'm sure he had a good sized record collection that you could pull from. But I'd love to ask this question because it says a lot about choices. And what was the first record that you bought with your own money?
Oh, that's a good, you know, what's really messed up about this, and you're going to laugh, was I think it was Lynyrd Skynyrd. It was Eagles Hell Freezes Over and Lynyrd Skynyrd. I went and got these two CDs, right? Uh-huh. But before that, I had a Dr. Dre record CD, you know? And I just got it because everybody in my class was listening to rap all of a sudden. And for the cuss words, I'm pretty sure is why we didn't read it any better. And, because we were little kids, you know, but an upperclassman he was cruising around and he had Zeppelin's first record, and you know, and he was playing his truck, and I was like, "What is this?" And it blew my mind. And so I traded him my Dr. Dre CD for that, which I was like, "I'll never forget that moment."
And there you go.
I was watching the other day, Wayne's World was on, and I love Wayne's World, right? And I remember my mom taking me and like three of my buddies to the movies when it came out. And that scene when Foxy Lady starts playing, that's the first time I'd ever heard Jimi Hendrix in my life. And it clicked, and I was like, I remember turning to my buddy in there, and I was like, what is this? And he's like, oh, it's Jimi Hendrix. It's like,
who? Yeah, Jimmy who?
I went right out and got every Hendrix record I could. I got the fuzzy blacklight posters and all that stuff. Man, I was hooked after that, so.
So, okay, Led Zeppelin 1, obviously, you know, you drop the needle on that and you get Bonzo with his off time, a cowbell thing to set up good times, bad times. And then you're in going, what the fuck was that? That's pretty heavy stuff.
That set me off. I was like, I could not believe, because I grew up, I was hung out with the older guys, older crowd, you know, mm-hmm. So they were all, you know, into, you know, Dawkins or Slaughter, or cause that was that time, you know? And I never just, the Guns N' Roses is what caught me when that record came, you know, when I finally, you know, heard that and everything. But I just kind of, those other bands just didn't connect with me like Zeppelin did, or Creedence, or any of that, ZZ Top, that kind of stuff. So I'm grateful for that, by the way, because
yeah.
Lasts, you know, it's
good. That is an interesting thing is, you know, I was going to ask you, so, you know, you're still building a career, and, you know, you're talking about guys that have, you know, these that are still relevant 50 plus years
incredible.
On in a lot of people don't understand in musical tastes, they change normally fairly rapidly. And, you know, for some reason, this, you know, particular type of music, has hung on. A lot of people have called rock and roll dead for decades. Let me tell you, I used to hear about it in the 70s. Okay, so, you know, it's still holding on. It's not the cultural significant touchstone that it maybe once was, but it still holds this sway and this weight other musical art forms haven't quite achieved. I'm not quite sure we'll ever see a period like we did, certainly from the 60s through the 80s and maybe even through the 90s. This was the language of the youth. I mean, this is how we spoke to each other, was through the tribes we chose, was through those bands and that sort of stuff. You know, music is a little bit more of a background. And you mentioned social media. A lot of people ask me, oh, well, what is the music that's going to make the difference? And I said, no, it's not music. It's social media. Social media is the cultural signifier of today. Yeah. And what tribe you live in and that sort of thing. So, you know, so, but you know what, if you are lucky to have a 50-year career, what do you hope to look back on and go, wow, look what I accomplished?
Just that it survives, really, you know, just to be like, and to not say that I made the same record over and over again. That's exactly what I don't want to do. That's Sunshine, you know, the record we just put out. We recorded in our own studio, in our garage, actually, our rehearsal space. We just converted it and brought in gear from Johnny K, our producer, and we made the whole record in our rehearsal spot. And now the one we're working on out here, we completely moved out of the garage. We're in the Ozarks. We're not in the city. And we're in this beautiful house and we're just living and breathing it. And you can already tell in the tracks we've cut that you can hear the difference. And it's growth is what I, you know, just another, it's another way of doing things, you know, it's necessarily any better. It's just different. And, you know, and hopefully, you know, hopefully it is a little better, but I'm really happy with
it. Should be a little better. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, continual improvement be the direction.
Yeah. The ride is a spice of life, man. That's right. My career lasts like that. Like, look at Robert Plant. That guy has killed it. He's got to do everything that he's wanted to do, work with everybody he's wanted to work with. He was in Zeppelin and then he went solo and then he's did the Alison Krauss record that was just phenomenal.
Matt T-Bone Burnett, yeah.
Man, that thing is just great. And then he's out with this
Shapeshifters.
Yeah. It's like,
yeah. It's so where they're reimagining some of the Zeppelin songs in a really fucking cool way too. Yeah. It's
like that guy's career is pretty spectacular. You know, he can say he's tried it all, really. You know, he's done everything that he wants to do. So
yeah,
not be sterile. That's what I don't want to look back and be like, mm-hmm. the same record for 50 years, you know, with bands, some bands can do that. AC/DC, they don't give any qualms about that. But that's AC/DC. They can get away with that.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. It's like, every other album, at least there's one song that just becomes an instant classic again. You're like, sure, it sounds like Highway to Hell, but I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
It still sounds fucking great. Yeah, that's Angus for you, you know. So I mean, you know, who are your biggest influences as you're writing today?
Well, you know, I always keep Jimmy Page in mind because that guy's just, you know, the best.
Did you want to be a marine biologist when you were 12 years old?
No, that wasn't me. I still wanted to just play guitar when I was 12. I play guitar and then also can, you know, maybe flip burgers or something. I probably would suck at that too.
There's a famous video of him at 15. A BBC, you know, journalist throws a microphone in his face and says, you know, so, you know, do you want to take this guitar thing seriously and take it somewhere? And he's like, no, I'm going to be a marine biologist.
Ah, that's incredible. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But Jimmy, you know, certainly extraordinary in his ability to, you know, create riffs that stand, you know, the test of time.
But you know, Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age, his approach to stuff is really cool. Listening to those records makes me think outside the box, especially when it comes to solos and chord progressions and that kind of thing, you know, because he takes it out of left field. You know, you're like, I did not see that coming. And it does so good. It's amazing.
I agree. You know, there are a couple of, you know, rock acts that seem to be getting some attention again these days. You know, I know you guys are fans of Wolf Mother, which I think kind of started a bit of a resurgence, if you will. And granted, it's a key driven band. You know, who's the Zeppelin sound?
Greta Van Fleet, is that what you're talking
Greta
about?
Greta Van Fleet, yeah. I mean, they're huge. The Struts, who sound a little like Queen in some ways.
We've seen both of those bands before everything went down. And yeah, the Struts, their show was great. Their front man has got the thing.
Oh, Luke Spiller is, yeah, he's great.
Cool. I've never seen, he had the whole room on, he got them all to get down on the floor. All jump up. It was 2,500 people in the room. And it was just, we were in the balcony just kind of watching it. And I was just so impressed. It was great. And then I'm trying to think, there's, you know, Rival Sons are doing a great job.
Yeah, Rival Sons is another good one. Yeah.
Man, there's a few.
Well, I think that's what's important. You know, I think back on the Beatles and the Stones and the Who and the Kinks and, you know, all those guys were, you know, the competition was so stiff. And, you know, you heard, you know, the latest album and you said, well, shit, I got to beat that. Yeah. You know, and I think that really, you know, has a lot to do with why there are such classic songs and albums from that era, is because the competition was so stiff and everybody knew that they had to one up the next guy.
Yeah,
you know, are you able to find the same thing out there? That's a hard one, huh?
It is, yeah. Because not that we don't pay attention to what everybody else is doing, because I listen to everybody's records. You know,
everything.
But we definitely go have our own path, and so not that, I mean, everything's inspiration for me. You know, whether it's the clock click. Looking around, you know, and or just stuff just like is inspiring. But as far as other people's records right now, I haven't heard an entire album, which, again, in everybody's defense too, a lot of people are just putting out singles or EPs. They're not even doing the full record anymore.
Yeah, there is some evidence that perhaps the art form of the album is dying.
I like to have an album like, check, I just got this in the mail.
Oh, and vinyl.
Yeah. Oh, check this out. It's yellow.
Oh, my God. Nice.
This is our first vinyl.
It's the sun. Right.
Yeah. So this came out really well. So that's why I like to make records, because I want to hold it in my hand.
I agree. Yeah, the tangible, and that's part of the issue, is that, you know, these works are now, you know, just pieces of digital data. Yeah. And they're not, you know, tangible to be held in your hands. You know, you just pulled out a 12-inch record, which means that, you know, there's artwork to admire, there's liner notes to read.
I want to see who recorded what, who played what, who wrote what, you know.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. yeah but you know, in this fast-paced world, there's less of that, and there seems to be more of this interest in just, you know, it's consumable is the problem, is that you know, back in the day, you know, there were, like, you know, maybe 1,000 people in the music business, you know, and, you know, now there's certainly 10,000 people, if not 100,000 people. They're all vying for eyeballs or ear share, if you will. And, you know, there's a lot of mediocrity, and it's hard without, you know, radio used to provide this first level of influence. You know, it was these disc jockeys who, you know, took their job serious, and they were the gatekeepers, and they determined what was good and bad, especially when you got into that FM DJ world, who, you know, knew you know, their history and knew, you know, who was really good and not. And, you know, they could help break a band. And it's really hard to get that these days.
Not that way anymore. It's so frustrating that in that aspect of things, because DJs have no control anymore.
No, it's some programmer in New York that is determining the across the country.
You don't play what you're told, then you'll lose your job. I mean, that's not simple. And so that's disheartening as far as the music business goes. But I mean, it's still out there. You know, the program directors, everybody that we've come across has been super great and really nice to us and honest, sometimes brutally honest, which we appreciate too, you know.
Yeah, you need that.
Yeah, but we've just come into a weird time in everything right now.
So. Yeah, to be honest with you, the world has not seen something like this certainly since World War II. This is a global situation. We don't know how it's going to go. There's no assurance to an end, and what's going to be on the other side of that. I hear you, and I feel bad for you guys. I mean, you're up and coming. You've made three albums since 2012, and you know, this one definitely has that feel of a real, oh, these guys are about ready to hit it big. In fact, I think you were due to open for Metallica at a stadium show, right?
That was going to be our first stadium show. And man, that was just, it's hard to even talk about.
I can imagine.
Because we had festivals lined up after that. It was kind of, okay, you know, we've been touring here and now, okay, this is the next step.
Yeah.
And it was just a kick in the nuts. Man, it was tough. But we're survivors. We're going to figure it out. So that's why we just keep working.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what I've seen is those that are dedicated to the craft, that have no plan B, and that keep their nose clean, and I mean that literally and figuratively, are the ones that, you know, can make a serious career out of playing music. You know, I'm not quite sure if you're going to get your own starship plane like Zeppelin did, but, you know, at least a good, decent tour bus.
Right. I just don't want to have to drive it anymore.
I understand you guys bought a correctional bus.
It was the point where the band van had, we've had so many vans and we needed to up our game. And we found my drummer Chico, he found on Craigslist an LA County probation bus, and it was completely gutted. And we went and picked it up and built that thing out. And we definitely bleached the hell out of it, you know, but it's still got the cop lights on it, which is really cool.
Nice.
Yeah, we've messed with a few bands here and there, pulling up on stage or whatever it is behind the venue. So, but it's great.
Very nice.
Yeah. Of course, we get a tour bus, and then now there's no tours. So.
Yeah. But you know, again, going back and spending time in the recording studio to add more material, which, you know, adds more to a backlog, more song choices in a show. You know, usually, you know, more gives you the cream of the crop to pull from.
Yeah.
So this may not, you know, if you look at it from that standpoint, you guys are able to put out a really good record. That you know, that'll make it worthwhile for sure. Okay, so let's talk about the new album, Sunshine. And you know, what are your thoughts about having to release it in these unprecedented times?
Well, we went back and forth about that. About should we wait to put it out? And you know, we know a lot of bands or a lot of artists did wait.
But yeah,
it gave us even more of why. I mean, we'd already, you know. In our position now and the level we are, you don't, there's no just like making a record and okay, well, here it is. It's done. Let's put it out. You know, there's like months of planning to go in to, and we decided to go ahead with it. One, because it was already slated. It was, you know, we've been working on it for so long. We just wanted to get it out anyway, but we figure if everybody's held up, at home, you know, what better time for them to
listen,
get in, you know, and actually pay attention to it. And, you know, instead of just throwing it in their car and like, or whatever it is, they're listening to it, you know, now they get to, you know, listen to it and pay attention. Be there in it or whatever. I'm glad we did it this way.
You know, if you guys have gone right back in the studio and you have this time, you can't tour, and you know, to be able to really, really focus and take your time, which you know you don't normally get. I think that might turn out pretty good for you, and I'm really excited to see where it goes. So, take me through a little bit about you know, the three albums now. So you started with you know, the original 2012, the eponymous the Black Moods, and then I think it was 2018, so just a couple of years ago, that you came out with the second album, right?
That's when it came out. The first one we did because we had kind of a buddy of ours who produced the first two records just kind of hit me up, and he's because Chico and I were doing other things at the time, and he's just said, hey, you guys want to make a Black Moods record? And it was just the perfect time that we were all like, yes, let's do that. And so we just went in there, and I'd been writing songs. And so we kind of had them and got that album done. And it was all on our own. We were independent released it and all that stuff. And then we started touring and doing it ourselves. You know, we literally made press packets, and three of us went out on the road, and we would just book any little shitty club or place that would have us, you know, because we didn't understand the booking agent aspect of things and all this kind of stuff. So we just got a map out, and because being from Missouri, we're like, well, we can go back and play in Missouri around there and play in Arizona and try to fill it in between. And that's what we did. And it worked. And then we got a deal with Another Century and started making a record. Well, we actually started making the second record, and they came in and signed us in the middle of that. And then Sony bought them up during the making of that. So all of a sudden we have management, we have a major label, and we just think it's going to be the best thing in the world. We're like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. And we started touring.
So this was during the making of Medicine.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and we started getting better shows, and actually had a booking agent and all this kind of stuff, but it was slow going, and we couldn't make a move without talking to the label or getting their approval. And they were just like, ah, and then they weren't going to go to radio with any of the songs off the album. And I just blew my mind. And they just kept saying, well, you're not a radio band. You're a touring band. You're going to break my touring. And we're just pissed off because, you know, sitting in my room playing guitar when I was 12 years old and listening to the radio, you want to be on the radio. That's like that's the fun of it. You know, that's everything. And, so that was really frustrating. And then they just kind of kept us on the back burner, is what it seemed like. So we asked to get out of that deal, and we've had to fight to get out of it, and like pulling teeth. And finally we got out of the thing, and we were lucky enough to sign with Steel Horse, which is a brand new label, but they believe in us, and they got our backs, and they leave us alone when it comes to making the records and provide us. They keep us sheltered from all the bullshit, really.
Right.
Really great. Mm-hmm. They put Sunshine out, and we went from what we weren't a radio band to having four top 40 singles already from this record.
There you go. So much for Sony and what they know, huh?
Yeah, and I can't. I don't.
You don't know how many times I've heard this story of like the suits going, no, we got this. We know how to do this. We're the experts. And it ain't that ain't the fact.
It's the truth. And I don't hold anything against those guys, because I just feel like they didn't know what to do with us, because that's what they said. They didn't know we're a modern classic rock band is kind of what. And they said, there's no place to put you guys because there's alternative radio. We're not an alternative band, or there's active rock. And we're not like, you know, Five Finger Death Punch or any of that shit. We're a three piece rock and roll band. And for some reason, that was so hard to figure out where to put a rock and roll band on the radio for those guys. We're starting to find our home. I think we're active rock right now. And I still don't think that we're that much of an active rock band, but we cover the board. You know, we're not pigeonholed. Like, you know, we could be triple A. We could, you know, we have an alternative side. It's, we just play rock songs. So however they come out, wherever you want to put those things, that's what it is.
Well, in the end, Josh, isn't it just about the song? I mean, if a song is a great song, it's going to find an audience if given half a chance.
Absolutely. If you got people behind you that believe in what you're doing and hear the song and they believe in it, that's what makes the difference. Because, I think there's great songs on there and it should have had its chance at radio, but that just wasn't in the cards, I guess, for that label. So we had to move on.
Well, you know, you have a new opportunity and four singles out is definitely a step in the right direction. What are the four singles? I know Belladonna is one of them.
Yeah, Belladonna was the first one we put out. And then Bad News we put out after
that. Bad News, yes. Okay.
Bad News is our highest charting one. I think it was 24. And then we put out What You Got, which is more of an active rock. If there's, you know, if you got to put us in that thing, that was the one. And it did as well as we thought it would. And it was coming at a weird time too for radio, because then Ozzy and all these heavy hitters started putting records out.
Hard to compete against that. Yeah.
And then What You Got, when that cycle finished, then we went with Sunshine. And I always thought Sunshine would be our home run off the record, as far as like appealing to everyone, you know. It's right now, putting Sunshine out and during all the shit that's going on, I think is the best thing. It's because it is. It's everybody needs a little sunshine in their life. You know, why not?
Certainly now. Yeah.
So, and it's, I think it's 20. So this is our first top 20 hit that we've had. Which
good.
It feels good, you know.
Now, I read that you guys and producer Johnny K didn't always see eye to eye.
Now, he's our brother. He'd always give me a hard time, you know. And that's what a producer's for. He's there to ruffle your feathers, to get the...
Make you think, yeah.
Turn over every stone is what he says. Let's see where this goes. And if you can try it and nothing's better than the original idea, then you got the original idea. But if you find something else that works, then... And he helped a lot of the songs grow. And... Mm-hmm. And you know, but he did have his moments where he'd make like comments to me when I was tracking vocals, like sing it like you did when I liked it. Play it like you did when I dug it.
You know? Yeah.
I guess.
Maybe it needed a little more anger in the in the delivery, huh?
There was some tears shed, I'm not gonna lie. It's a little hard to take at points, but that's what I asked for. That's what we wanted. That's why we brought
them. Well, they're your babies, and you want to protect them, and you want to keep them the way they are, and love them regardless if they were born cross-eyed. And
exactly. Well put.
Oh my gosh! So, how did Tempe, Arizona, become your home base until just recently?
The Gin Blossoms were one of my favorite bands, still are. Growing up, I was just hooked. My dad was watching the American music. I was in my room playing Cocaine over and over on guitar, annoying the hell out of my mother, by the way. And very terribly, might I add. It's like, if you could fuck up a song, I was doing it at 12 years old. Two chords.
Yeah.
My dad was watching an award
show. You just wanted to say Cocaine over and over again.
That's awesome. But my dad is watching American Music Awards or something, and the Blossoms were on there playing Hey Jealousy, and my dad's like, he calls me Bub, you know, my whole family does. So he's like, hey Bub, get in here. And I come running in there. He's like, look at this band. He's like, this is great. He's like, this is a great song. You should write songs like this. And so from then on, I was just like, I'm going to be in the Gin Blossoms. My dad thinks they're cool. And so I had all the records, and then the band I had in high school, we covered a lot of Blossom songs, and the Blossoms had broken up and they went separate ways, and the lead singer had started another band, and his band happened to be coming through Springfield, Missouri, which we were close. I lived close to there, grew up there. And so I got all the guys in my band tickets, and we went to the show. And after the show, we got stoned with him. We met him after the show. And we're like, hey, you know, you want to get stoned? And he's like, sure. So he got in our band van, which is a piece of shit. And we gave him our demo tape.
Wow. That must have been exciting. Here it is.
Yeah, which I'm sure
our moment.
Yeah.
And we're going to make it after this.
I walked him back to his to the bus, and he told me, he's like, go to college, don't get in the music business, whatever you do. And he said, but if you wind up coming out to Tempe, Arizona, I have a studio out there. He's like, look me up. And I was like, holy shit. So I immediately went back home and I found him on, I found the studio and everything. And in the back of Rolling Stone magazine was an ad for the Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences. And so I put in to go to school there and wound up getting in, and I moved to Tempe, and I went to find Robin, but I wasn't 21 to go in the bar, and he was playing acoustic. And so they threw me out of the bar before I got a chance to hang out with him. But I told him I was going to the conservatory. So he's like, come by my studio, you can get some intern hours. Time went by, I never saw him again. When I was getting ready to move to Nashville and to go to school there, or to do my internship in Nashville. And there was a flyer up at school, and it was my last day there. And on the flyer, it said, wanted conservatory student from Missouri, Smokey Van required.
He is looking for you.
And that's, but he didn't remember my name or this. And so when I finally called him, he was like, no, because he had other guys call about the internship. And he's like, no, the guy I'm looking for. And I said, we got you stoned in my van. And I said, also, you hit on my girlfriend. He's like, Josh, I've been trying to.
Oh, I remember that.
So I wound up hooking up with him and doing my whole internship at his studio. And that's when I met Chico, and we were working on our own songs. I wound up going out on tour as their guitar tech and stage manager for a while for the Blossoms. And
dreams really do come true.
For my 21st birthday, I was handing off Scotty Johnson, lead guitar player, because we switched guitar, you know, at a certain point in the set. And there was like, I don't know, 5,000 people in the audience. And I was like, here. And he's like, I said, take it. He's like, no, I'm not taking that. And I'm getting nervous. I'm like, you take this damn thing. We got to switch it out. He's like, no, you're playing it. Happy birthday. And look at all the.
Oh, shit.
My hair still stands up when I talk about it.
Oh, man.
And then they made a big deal out of it. And I got to play I Need to Know by Tom Petty with the Chim Blossoms on my 21st birthday.
That's pretty fucking cool.
It was great, man. And they're my best friends now. Like, and they take us out on the road with them. It's incredible. I mean, that was my dream when I was 13 years old. I was going to be in that band, play guitar with them. And I did that, you know? So it's been really inspiring. And they've introduced me to, you know, oh, it's crazy. The phone numbers that I have now are a lot of my heroes that I grew up with their records. And it's just like, I can call them and ask advice or all this kind of stuff. It's pretty incredible. I'm very lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's what tells me that, you know, you guys do have a real shot at becoming something, you know, once we get on the other side of this thing, you know, we'll get you there. So tell me a little bit about Chico Diaz and what he brings and what Jordan Hoffman brings to the trio.
Chico's kind of the brains of the operation. He's good at math in the band. So him and I met and we just hit it off, and we both are really driven, you know? So we've been stuck together for, I don't know, like I said, I met him in 2000. We were kids, 2003, whatever it was, 2004. And a great drummer, but you know, he's just really supportive and like my vision and what I see, you know, and he's my brother. And Jordan the same way. You know, we met Jordan, he was playing in a band, because he'd moved from Ohio to LA, been living out there like 5 years. So he was in another band, and we played a shit. They opened up for us in Arizona, and he wound up, we kind of stole him, you know, and he flew out and auditioned and jammed with us. He flew here. We played an hour, ran through like an hour's worth of tunes, and it was, hey, let's go get drunk somewhere. And then we just went and the next week, we went and got his shit, and he moved to Arizona. And now that's the story, man. And he's great too. He's songwriting, like, he's brought a lot to the table songwriting wise and all that stuff. So they're my brother.
Yeah, but can he play bass, sing, play keyboards with his ass, and Taurus pedals with his foot like Geddy Lee?
Yeah, he's not.
You just get him there over time. Him there over time.
He's not playing that the the keys with the bass parts with his feet yet, you know. Get there.
So what is, for our gearheads, what's the rig that that you enjoy taking out with you on the road?
I actually have the amps I use are called Fopstar amps. A guy out of Phoenix named Drew Fop.
Boutique.
Yeah, they're just incredible. And I've known him since we were kids too, but he goes out, well, when they were touring, he was out with Fleetwood Mac forever. And then the Deftones is his gig, and he just did the Smashing Pumpkins tour, but he's like Doc Brown from Back to the Future, dude. He is just so my whole tone. He mods all my pedals, you know, and my pedals are pretty basic. I use a, you know, like just a super overdrive and a verb and a couple delays or whatnot. But I'm pretty bare bones when it comes to that kind of stuff, you know, and then. I got a couple strats, some custom strats that I had made, you know. The main guitars that I use didn't cost me more than $200, you know.
Really?
Yeah, the less,
what, like Epis or something?
No, this, well, yeah, the my Epiphone that I got when I was 12 years old, it was it's a 76 Epiphone.
Oh.
So it's like before they started cutting the headstocks off to where they look a little cheaper or whatnot. And it weighs, it's my baby. And like I said, I got it when I was 12, and he's modded that thing to where it's just, you know, amazing. And then the Strat I use, it's like, it, you know, it's a Franken Strat. It's a piece of this and a piece of that. And a guy in the opening band had it, and he's like, "Hey, will you play my guitar?" And we were playing at Tulsa Raceway. And I was like, "No, I'm not playing your damn guitar. I got my guitar." Well, then we had a couple more drinks, and I'm like, "Go get it. I'll play it." And as soon as I played it, I told our tour manager, I'm like, "Whatever it takes, give me this guitar." And he comes back, he's like, $200, and he hands it to me. It's like, shit. So those are my two main guitars that I use.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty incredible.
It's great, man. I love them. And, you know, but I've got,
I mean, that's classic. I mean, you've got the Les Paul sound, and you've got the Fender Strat. You know, nothing, you know, like a Jackson or a Paul Reed Smith or any of that.
And I've got, you know, probably 30 guitars, but I always go back to those.
They don't quite feel right in the hands. Yeah.
And they're great for the studio for when we're recording, so I can try a bunch of different stuff. But
yeah,
but live, I got my workhorses, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're married to only two women.
That's right. That's right.
All right, so you know, I'm a bit of a wine snob. Describe to me a bottle of Belladonna Red.
Oh man, we've been approached about, you know, doing different things like making a beer or whiskey and putting our name on that kind of thing, and we've tried it and I've never liked them. And then a friend of ours mentioned, you know, what you guys be interested in, you know, lending your name to a bottle of wine. And like, let me try it first because I don't want to put my name on shit. We went to go did his tasting and we picked it out. It's a red blend. It comes from California and they bottle it in Arizona, and it's great. I'm a fan of it. You know, it goes great with anything. It goes great with anything. Chicken strips or steaks, whatever.
Fish, whatever. Yeah. We don't need no white wine, man.
It's good.
White wine's for pussies.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then speaking of that, we have a sunshine that's going to come out, and it is the white wine. It's like it's a sweeter one. You know, it's good, but I'm more the Belladonna red wine kind of guy.
I'm with you.
Merlot Cab kind of fella, you know.
Right.
Or Jameson. Right.
Jameson. That's you prefer, not the wine. Let's just get right to the whiskey. Right.
Man.
Well, Josh Kennedy, thanks so much for being with us on Deeper Digs today.
Thank you for having me. Anytime. Hit me up whenever, man. We're not going anywhere. So.
Right. We'll have to check back in as that new album's getting done.
Absolutely. I'll keep you posted.
She said, "I got something good for you, something good like I knew you would. I come around late like you always do in the doorway she stood. Sweet thing, gonna ring my bell, gonna ring my bell on the carousel. Guess where you've been, but you never tell, from heaven to hell. She just can't get enough. She says she's not in love. You better open up and love.
big thanks to Josh Kennedy for sitting down and talking with us today. Be sure to go and check out their latest release, Sunshine, wherever you get your favorite music. Keep an eye on them because, like all good rock bands, the live show is the thing. I'm keeping them on my list when the tour bus revs back up and gets everyone back on the road. Also, go check out their website, theblackmoods.com. Deep in the dig, Marty Hopes, a digger, a fan, said this to me this weekend, or sent that to me this weekend in a nice message. Marty's a digger out in Montana, and I like the term, deep in the digs. I think he was listening to a lot of our shows is what that means. I told him I was stealing it. You know, who else is deep in the digs? I'd like to know. Send me your cards and letters, your unhinged rants. I thought I should just give a shout out to all of you who make what we do here at Pantheon Podcasts something special. Without you, why keep doing what we're doing? We'd hoped a community of like-minded folks would enjoy endless discussion on music history told in a variety of edutainment, if you will, shows. And sure enough, every month the Paperboy brings more. All of this has been done by word of mouth. We've spent very little on marketing so far. We really wanted to gain the street cred of the underground first. We wanted to spend the last few years honing the chops and getting literally one fan at a time. Kind of like Josh and the Black Moods. They are doing it the old school way, which I think, you know, gives you a base of authentic fans that will stay with you forever. And that is my point this week. We built an army of authentic fans now. And, you know, this month we will go over 250,000 listens in a single month. We're growing by double digits every month. And that is all on you guys. Big, big thank you. When I asked you to tell your friends, well, you dug in and did exactly that. We appreciate all of you who have sung the praises of Rock and Roll Archaeology, Deeper Digs, you know, and all the Pantheon shows that we have. I think it's almost 50. I think we're 48 or 49. Pretty soon it's going to be 50, and then it'll be 100. We're just looking to continue to grow this and give you guys as much music, commentary, interviews, history. Boy, I'll tell you, we got a couple of things that are up our sleeve that I think you're really going to enjoy here. And, you know, again, pay attention to this space. I'm always, you know, calling out the latest that we have. So I know not everyone likes every show. I mean, who would, especially when you start to get to have about 50. But what we do know is that every show has found its own fans and continues to grow. Also, we've heard some complaints on the big pipe where almost all the shows are put into the feed, the Pantheon podcast feed. It's our magazine format. And like a magazine, you know, you read the articles that most interest you, you know, and bypass the ones that don't. Easy breezy, huh? I like to explain it as our sampler plate. If you really like a show, please go over to that show's individual feed and subscribe only to the shows you like. Now, I mean, if you like all the shows, you have the Big Pipe, the Pantheon main feed, you're all good. But some people I know say, geez, I don't like this one. I don't like that. Well, and if it bothers you, it's in your feed, then, you know, find the ones that mean something to you and put those in there. So it's just two different ways to do it when you get right down there. All right. They are all there in your favorite podcast app, I guarantee you. But by far, you all seem to love what we are doing by and large, and we thank you for that. All right, that's it for this week. Next week, we have another legend for you. Shep Gordon will be joining me in Maui. Well, he's in Maui, and I just fantasize about being there. Shep is a legendary manager, most famously being Alice Cooper's one and only manager throughout his entire career. But Shep is even more than that. He created the Celebrity Chef, made some amazing movies, and worked with many others in the music world. We cover everything because Shep was so generous with his time. Oh, man, it's a big one. It's a long one, but it's great. So come on back for that one. All right. Okay. Until then, y'all know what to do. Keep up the rocking.
Seize out with a hot hand. Stop me. Not a mole in a cold stare.
Deeper Digs is hosted by Christian Swain. Produced by Christian Swain and Peter Farioli. Sound designed by Busy Signal Studios. Engineered by Jerry Danielson, Christy O'Donnell, and Leslie Barker. Find all of our shows, notes, and social links at pantheonpodcast.com. Contact us on social at Pantheon Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. Tweet us at Pantheon Pods. All songs can be found used in this podcast for purchase or streaming wherever you get your great music. Please pick up these amazing tracks.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.